Hey, folks, I know there are lots of business owners who listen to this show. Maybe some of you never planned on running a business, but now here you are. One thing you've always got to keep in mind is how much you're spending on your operating costs. That's one of the first things we had to keep in mind with WTF. And with things costing more today than they did when we started, you want to keep your expenses down. To reduce costs and headaches, be smart and use NetSuite by Oracle, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Reduce IT costs, cut the costs of maintaining multiple systems, improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/WTF for more. That's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/WTF.
Lock the gate!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck, buddies? What the fuck, Nicks? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. I am back. I recorded this yesterday. I was on the plane this morning, and I got up very early. I got up, and you know, it was dark out. I'm driving the rental car. You know, it cuts both ways, this road business. Today on the show, I talked to Adam Ray. All right, he's a comic. I see him at the store all the time. He's an actor. He's currently on NBC's Young Rock, where he plays Vince McMahon. And he played Jay Leno on Hulu's Pam and Tommy miniseries. Also has a podcast called About Last Night. I also used to have a podcast with Brad Williams. And it was one of these weird things. I told them I'd do it, and I parked on the street, and I parked right in front of a driveway to an apartment building's parking lot. And my car was towed, and I had no idea how it happened. I don't know what the fuck I was thinking. So anyways, it can cut both ways, my friends. This life, like if I had, what did I have? A couple weeks in between the long sets. And I had some pretty great sets. Sometimes you're really in the groove. And my groove is very close to who I am. And I don't know when it's going to happen and for how long. It's an interesting thing. Sometimes it happens right away and it stays locked in all the way through. Other times, it starts off a little rocky. Not bad. It's not like people don't like me who come to see me. They're there to see me. But it's fragmented because there's a little chaos in the room. And I know I'm choosing to be my own opener because I think an evening with Mark Maron, in that sense, where I'm seeing it as a performance, a singular performance of a relatively structured theatrical event that is me. And I'm doing like an hour and a half to 2 hours. So why not just go do it? I don't know who made these rules about opening acts or whatever. I guess sometimes I think, I don't know if it's good for the show. I know it's good to get people settled in their seats. And it's probably good for that performer. But I'm just trying to forego it to try to create a different expectation around what I'm doing. Because I feel at the end of a show, the shows I've been doing, like I've been through something. I'm not doing an act. I know there are bits, but I'm trying to feel like there's an arc to this thing. But all I'm saying is I got down there a night early. I stayed at Kimpton's. I stayed at the Sylvan in Atlanta. It was okay. But I'll tell you something honestly. They should probably tell you if their fucking hotel is going to turn into a goddamn nightclub on the weekend. That shouldn't be a surprise. It should be there when you book it. Like right at the top, welcome to the Kimpton Sylvan. By the way, on Saturday nights in our 8-story hotel on the roof, we're going to be blasting hip hop all day until midnight. So if you're on the 8th floor, it's going to be right above you. And if you had any sort of idea that maybe you get a full night's sleep in before you get up to go to the fucking airport in the morning, that's not going to happen. But here are the room selections, and we have a nice restaurant. It should just say that. By the way, our hotel turns into a shitty fucking club on weekend nights. So if you're looking for sleep, we're more concerned with selling drinks. Okay? Do we understand each other? I don't know why. The reason they don't fucking do it, the reason they don't say that, is because they'd lose business from goddamn adults. I mean, I wasn't that upset about it. You know, 12 o'clock is not a horrendous time to go to bed, and I was, you know, reading. I've been deeply immersed in a book, preparing for a guest. And I haven't really... I love when I get locked into a book, and I was just totally surprised by this book. It's Harvey Fierstein's memoir. I think it's called I Was Better Last Night. I knew nothing about him. I'm not a big theater person, but what a life. And New York at that time, it's just great. Tells a good story. He's a good writer. He'll be on the show. I'll say that again later because I'm going to talk to him. But that whole nightclub element, because you can lock in. There's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do to sleep. There's nothing you can do to stop it. It's not like someone in the room next door. That happens too. That's the problem. No matter how nice the fucking hotel, if somebody's paying for the room, you could get fucked. If they decide to put you next to the elevator because that's the last room they got, you could get fucked. It's hard for me not to feel like I'm some sort of mark and that I've been set up. But I handled it well, like a fucking adult. I'm like, oh, okay. Didn't realize this was a fucking nightclub hotel. I'll suck it up for another hour or two. But they should tell you, you know? So, yeah. So the hotel was what it was. And I stayed an extra day because my brother came up from Florida to see the show with his girlfriend, his partner. So, you know, I got to spend time with family. But the show, all right, granted, I had a quadruple shot macchiato like within hours before the show. And I don't think it kicked in until like 5 minutes when I got on stage. And I kind of went into sort of a hyper kind of a paralysis, as I do, too caffeinated. But too many people were coming in. You know, 15 minutes, we held the show 15 minutes and there were still like so many people coming in. And I guess that's why the opener takes a hit. I get it. But I just felt personally, and no one needs to know this, I thought it was a good show. I'm glad people came out. I thought it was a real show. But I think that's my problem, is I can't fucking fake it. So if I'm experiencing some sort of discomfort while I'm on stage, or that, you know, I'm not connecting the way I want to connect, I don't know that it reads, but it makes me a little, it makes me work differently. And I don't want to just, I do not want to autopilot things. And I guess that's on me. I don't know if it's a, like it's a discipline thing. I don't know. Maybe I set myself up. I don't know. It was a fine show. It was a long show. It was a full show and people had a nice time. I was happy to see everybody. I got back to the hotel and I just was sort of paralyzed. And I was like, you know, a couple weeks ago in Laconia, New Hampshire, you were like, why am I not sad? And this is what I'm doing, laying on a bed at a Best Western Plus and sort of owning my life and thinking like, nothing wrong with this. This is what I worked for. But for some reason, that night in Atlanta, I was like drifting into the darkness, into that weird road depression, into that weird kind of place where it's sort of like, what's the point of any of this? Why did, look out there, people have lives. What are you doing? Just in a hotel room. Nothing to do that night. Go down to the restaurant, eat by myself, read my Harvey Fierstein book about a guy that had this huge life. Either I don't appreciate the hugeness of my life and my accomplishments, or I need to figure out what the fuck to do to feel like I'm living my life. I'm hitting a wall, people. That's sort of what's happening. I'm sort of like coming to, in a way. My age, where I'm at in, you know, in terms of performing, you know, what is it that I want to do? What makes me happy? And I've talked about this before, but I better figure it the fuck out. I guess I'm starting to realize that maybe I have not processed thoroughly or deeply the events of the last couple of years. The ones that we all experienced together and the ones I experienced alone. I feel like I'm landing back in my same goddamn sad bag of skin and not much has changed other than for the worse. So I have tools. I have tools. I have a hammer. I have a wrench. have several screwdrivers. I can hit myself in the head, stick one in my leg, wake the fuck up, and be grateful. That's what I need to do. There's nothing like being at the edge, the existential edge of the abyss, of just sort of, you know, what is the point of it all? What am I doing? Am I doing my best? You can't explain that weird kind of road hotel room depression. It's not permanent, and it's very specific. And I don't think I'm the only one that's experienced it. I think it should probably be in the DSM, the mental, you know, it has all the ailments, all the psychological disorders. And maybe there's one in there called hotel room affective disorder, because it definitely is a thing. Like, you know, sometimes you get to a hotel room and you're like, it doesn't matter what your life is or how long you're going to be there. All of a sudden you're like in space and it's not great. The ship's not working great and you're in space. The best characterization of hotel room affective disorder is Anomalisa, the animated Charlie Kaufman thing. That is it. There's alcohol involved in that one. For me, it was just, you know, bags of cashews. But to be in that room, you know, being hard on myself about my performance and alone, it was just, it's a familiar place. I do know it's going to go away. And I just, you know, you just want to go to sleep. And what really amplifies hotel room affective disorder is when you're staying in a hotel that turns into a fucking nightclub on Saturday night and you're on the eighth floor and the party is happening right above your head. You're sitting there in bed thinking like, maybe it's time to stop. I don't know, man. Last week, why do I feel everyone enjoyed it? Maybe I can't. What? And then boom, 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 ba, boom, tick, boom, ba. I don't know what the music was. Doom, doom, taka, boom, boom, taka, boom. Several different ones. Boom, doom, taka, doom, taka, doom, taka, doom. Bam, bim. It was shaking the room. Shaking the room. Maybe that was buoying my hotel affective disorder. Maybe it was making it worse. I will have to reflect on that. But I heard glasses clinking, people laughing, and then that bass and the songs. I heard whole songs. It was literally the ceiling of my room and the window. And maybe it's like I just don't understand life. Why am I not on that fucking roof? Why am I not on that roof jumping off? Because there's a party going on, man. Come on. So Adam Ray, his podcast is called About Last Night. And you can get that wherever you get podcasts. He's on tour right now. Go to adamraycomedy.com for his tour dates. He does stand up with me over at the Comedy Store all the time. He's acting a lot. He was on Pam and Tommy, and he's also in Young Rock. And it was time. It was time to talk to Adam Ray. And this is me doing it.
Well, you got pretty much all the stuff.
Yeah.
A kid would have in his fanny pack if he was going to run away from home.
Yeah.
A hammer, dice.
Pocket knife.
What's it? X-Acto knife?
No, that's a regular pocket knife.
Right.
Yeah, and the dice. Yeah, and of course, any kid needs dice.
Every kid needs dice because you never know when you're going to come across some sort of...
gambling ring, some sort of crap game. You don't want to be the pit master.
I mean, I had a kid in elementary school, one of my friends who had a candy club. Yeah. The candy his mom would buy, he would then charge you $5 a month to eat the candy from his house.
And
I'll say his name if that's what you're going to ask.
Well, I mean, I don't want to. Is there a statute of limitations on this information? Is the kid, did he
grow up to do some other shady shit?
Is he a shady grifting?
I mean, as shady as you can be, he ended up marrying my high school girlfriend, so I guess he knows who he is.
So were you one of the suckers who paid him?
Candy? Well, I was a classic fat kid, so I think if there was candy in a house and
a classic fat kid?
Yeah.
Like old school fat kid?
There are layers and levels, not only to the degrees in which you will go for snacks, but wait, today's fat kids,
yeah,
I think, are worse off.
Why is that?
Because they have more things to keep them inside and
more access.
I was an active fat kid. That's why I'm an active stoner.
You're an active fat kid, and now you're an active stoner. But wait.
Write that down. So, if there's a title for this episode.
Well, no, I think that's a title for your CD. Are you going to put one out?
People still making active CDs? Fat. I'd love sure. CDs.
Maybe I listen to... you got to do it on something. put on your YouTube thing, whatever the fuck you do.
When I first was getting into stand-up, and I would drive to see my dad in Laughlin, Nevada, when he moved out there, and was a doctor.
Laughlin?
At the VA clinic, yeah.
Okay.
Edgewater Casino, you ever perform there?
No, but I know where it is. I know you drive through it, I think, going across, don't you? Laughlin,
mostly
maybe
you
not.
Drive through it.
Yeah.
If you're driving to stop, it's not bad. It's a big Indian reservation. You know, there's a few casinos.
Yeah.
My dad lived out there while he was working at the VA clinic, and he worked something out with the Avi Casino where he would just live in the casino.
So he's a degenerate gambler, your father?
I wish. I mean, great with money? You know, debatable.
It's the only time you can use the word degenerate.
I know.
It's weird. It's not a bad word, but it just always goes before gambler.
Now, let me ask.
The other stuff is it's just assume you're a degenerate. But with gambling, it's like, if you gamble, you're a degenerate gambler.
Now, let me ask you this.
Yeah, what?
Would you rather be called a degenerate or a bummer?
Degenerate.
Okay.
I mean, degenerate was sort of a flag of honor, or whatever you call it, a badge of honor.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
In your day.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess so. I mean, I just wrote a foreword for an introduction for a book of underground comics, and underground comics were degenerate, but it was in a good way.
In a good way.
Yeah, degenerate was a label put on people who were having a good time.
There were positive connotations towards it. Sure, yeah. A degenerate was a lazier or more, I guess, artsy way of saying you're a... You like to have fun. You like to
have a fun
party animal without saying it.
Or you just don't fit in. You're an
outsider.
You're a barnacle on society.
Sure.
An outsider. A Jew.
I knew we were building to that.
A degenerate
slope.
Jew. So
the fat kid stoner thing. Here's why there's a difference.
Yeah.
My nephew now, who's 7, is super active.
And he's a stoner?
But
who's 7? What are you doing?
I can't wait, honestly, to smoke pot with this kid. Is that weird?
Yeah.
I look at him now.
A little.
I don't know. He's just such a goofball, but he's real active,
right.
But he snacks like crazy.
Yeah.
I was that way, but I didn't have as many game apparatuses.
Oh,
YouTube.
You mean indoor game?
I'm just saying there's more
gaming.
Yes. More opportunities for them to all stay locked inside and go outside.
Yeah, I don't even know if they have a social life. Do they?
Man, the
outside, I mean, in person, an in-person social life?
My nephew at 7 does. My nieces at 12 are on TikTok. God bless them. So it's like they're active at school, but they're not doing what my nephew does at 7, which is meeting kids in the cul-de-sac and causing running amok, going into the woods to find trouble. You know what I'm saying?
That's what we used to do. Go find the porn magazines in the woods.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Who was the kid that had them in your neighborhood?
Well, someone's older brother.
Exactly.
You probably had one or two. And then one would just appear somewhere and you'd be like, oh, I used to do a bit about it. You'd go back to the same place where you found the one page. You know, maybe the rest of the magazine showed up. You never knew how they got there.
Yeah.
One was going around. I remember the first time, real filth. You know, not Playboy filth, but real filth, like porn filth, with that hyper glossy pages.
Wow.
And just like jizz and cocks and pussies. And it was like... It was
on every page, huh?
Yeah, it must have been like 8th or 9th grade. It was just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, what did you see first and what threw you into
I'm just talking about that in this thing I'm writing.
In someone's forward?
Yeah, because it's underground comics, about underground comics. And my first experience, when I was like 12 years old at a B. Dalton bookseller at the Wenrock Mall.
That's a shout-out.
In Albuquerque, New Mexico, that I'd taken the bus there to hang out at the mall. I just went to the bookstore to look at the comedy section, the humor section. And there was this book called The History of Underground Comics. And they didn't know what was in there. And it was just like fucking. It was all the Art Crumb stuff, just dicks and cocks and... You know, pirates and heads being cut off. All the underground comics. It was the history of underground comics. And I swear to God, I jerked off in the aisle right there in the bookstore.
Wow.
Yeah. But I didn't take it out, but just over my pants.
Yeah, you...
I was 12.
Just a no
had
hands.
To finish it up. Probably no hands, but I've tried to do that. I tried to do that every once in a while when I was a kid, but I don't think I ever pulled off a no-hander.
It is funny when those
did you
books...
To pull off a, did you pull off a no-hander?
You know...
Come on. It's hard. I remember I was on a trip with my parents in the station wagon, just in the back, trying to...
In a station wagon, too.
Trying to come without touching my dick.
Station wagon. The back of the station wagon is a great place... To come by yourself when no one's watching. Who said that? Mark Maron and Adam Ray today.
I never did, though. I tried. You can't.
You can't. It's impossible.
Your mom knows when you're jerking off.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like...
Ever get caught?
I don't think so. They used to, like, you know, stick their head in to say goodnight and stuff. But, like, maybe the mounds of, like, sticky Kleenex stuck in the edge beside my bed. Like, where do you think, who finds that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
And see, well, this is one of the benefits of having a single mom is I didn't have double dose of check-ins, of nightly check-ins.
Oh, like, so when's the dad one coming?
Yeah. And also, I think, I mean, you tell me. I mean, I don't know if the dad, if that's the role of, like, hey, are you jerking off? Is there a conversation that goes down? Because my mom didn't have it with me. She did buy me condoms way too early.
Yeah. I don't know. I knew about it. I don't think I ever got to talk.
Yeah.
But I definitely, there was...
Well, you didn't need it. You were looking at jizz and titty and cock pages.
Well, yeah, and there was Betamax. We had a you know, 14, 15 years old. I mean, there was porno tapes around that I got hold of.
Was there somebody's cool dad that kind of sat everyone down and was like...
No. We had to fend for ourselves, but it was the 70s, so, you know, it was...
Becoming cool.
I guess, but it was around, you know, filth was around, and my parents were not very disciplinarian. But, like, you imagine the kids today with all the porn?
Well,
you think someone's got to give you a conversation what to do?
It's, I don't think so. Porn, I think, is just ruining
everything.
So much for, it's ruining
it
everything.
It ruined me. Broke my brain.
You know what's so funny? What? This Pam and Tommy show that I got to be on is now making people, I get all these messages from people that tell me, I've gone back to find the tape. Isn't that crazy?
You played Jay Leno in
Yes.
this? Yeah.
And the Pam and Tommy sex tape that was, like, responsible, more or less, for...
Wasn't that good? It was okay.
I mean, I'm not here to dissect the ins and outs of it. It was fine.
The ins and outs of it?
Have you seen it?
The ins and outs of it? That's all there is to dissect.
I mean, if you want to talk, like, aesthetics, like, and how it was shot.
I know what it was, but it was only because...
But it was the first of its kind.
What, a celebrity fuck tape?
Yes.
Well, there haven't been that many, have there, publicly?
Since?
Paris Hilton and what
else? Paris Hilton, Kim Kardashian kind of launched the True movement.
Who gives a fuck about that?
Guess what? Yeah, who cares? But guess what? Before Pam and Tommy, I guarantee you there was probably another
thousand
couples making tapes that have never seen the light of day. So who are these couples?
Celebrities or just regular people? What do you mean?
Probably more regular people. But
who are they? Don't you have you porn? Did you just need to put it in?
But I'm saying, like, the celebs that didn't that didn't ever let their tapes get stolen from a disgruntled worker.
I recorded myself fucking once when I was in college.
Where's that
Betamax
tape?
It's around, but it's
around.
It's nothing great. I mean, you know what I mean? What is it, really?
Isn't that such a fucking move to, like...
But it wasn't done well. It was just, I just set up a camera on a tripod to see what it looked like.
On
you know
a
what?
Tripod.
It looks like porn.
Mark, you went as far to set up on a tripod.
Well, I told my girlfriend, what do you think, I was going to hide it? I'm like, let's try this. Let's see what it looks
like. But you didn't just, like, set it up on, like, the edge of the desk? Like, you got a tripod?
Well, I had a tripod.
That's the filmmaker in you.
That's right. So, I
really respect that, actually.
There's a big old clunky camera that I stole from my dad.
You wanted to do it right.
So wait, you grew up in where? Seattle?
Seattle, Lake Forest Park, Washington.
You're a Jew?
I'm a Jew, baby.
A Jew, but you're like East Coast style Jew. What, do your parents from the East Coast?
My mom is from Ada, Oklahoma.
No.
Yeah, and my dad is from Walla Walla, Washington.
What the fuck? So... And you turned out a New York Jew? You gave birth to a New York Jew?
I guess, yeah. I don't know.
Wait, he's some of the Oklahoma Jews?
Oh, tons of Oklahoma Jews.
I know, Tim Blake Nielsen, the actor, is Oklahoma Jew.
Wow.
And the reason he told me was that there was a time, maybe after World War II, I think, or maybe before, where the idea was immigrants, there was an organization that would, you know, assign them a state to spread everybody out so they wouldn't all be in one place when they come to kill us again.
I love that.
I think it's true.
Wow.
Like, there was an agency, a Jewish agency, that referred people to certain, you know, states or communities. Mm. The idea was like, we got to spread out this time.
Right.
We can't all be close. In Poland.
Yeah.
We can't all be in.
Yeah, mix it up, guys.
Yeah.
There's tons in Seattle.
Enough. Yeah, but what kind of Jews are they? Like San Francisco Jews? They're not really Jews, like these German aristocratic Jews who try to blend in. Now, you tell me there's a real Jewish community in Seattle?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I went to Temple Beth Am.
Conservative?
No, real, very reform.
See, that's
But you've got levels in it, just like you've got...
I'm not judging you, but like, was there a guitar there? During the services?
We had a cantor. We had a full choir.
Oh, this,
I was
there
bar mitzvahed.
There you go.
I worked there all through high school.
Let's back up a minute. Full choir.
Yeah.
The fuck is that?
You never had a choir singing Shema Yisrael?
In synagogue?
Yeah.
No, that choirs are for churches.
Boy.
Yeah, I'm sorry, buddy. I'm sorry. Like... That's real reform. Did you believe in Jesus, too?
No. I mean, you know.
Look, it depends what sort of snacks you judge. Got. I'm not religious. You know what I mean?
Snacks. I'm not really. I mean, I enjoyed bar mitzvah.
Let me ask you.
I was bar mitzvah.
Friday, Saturday, or just one day?
Who's doing 2 days? Who's doing a full weekend?
Me.
Wow.
Me. Friday was the Friday night service. Saturday, you did the Haftorah. That's how it worked. Wow. Friday night was just a Shabbat service. Saturday morning, that meant business.
I think we had
you were up there
dinner.
With the old guys.
Yeah.
Doing the Haftorah on Saturday morning.
Well, I crushed that. Worked with a tutor for probably 5 months.
You work with the choir?
I wish. I wish I was in musical theater. I would have hopped right up there.
Was it let me just ask you, was it a progressive female rabbi who played guitar?
We had a little rabbi who looked like...
A little rabbi.
His name was Rabbi Hirsch. He almost looked and sounded like John Lovitz's character in The Critic. Remember that cartoon?
Yeah.
He was a little weeble of a Jewish man, but had big presence.
Uh-huh.
And he was the last... He did my bar mitzvah and then retired.
That you put him over the top.
Yeah, he said it's not going to get better than this. Enough. Or worse.
Or worse.
I butchered the Via Hafta.
You did?
I got through it. I was pretty nervous.
I thought you just said he nailed it like moments ago.
I crushed... give me another one.
You crushed the Haftorah?
Not the Hafta. The Via Hafta.
The Via Hafta.
My tour portion I crushed. And then I had
I mean, that leads into the tour portion, doesn't it?
Look, it's all a blur at this point. I was on a lot of pills.
Yeah, then you go on the Haftorah.
All my mom's friends at Temple Beth Am are going to love that part.
It's the best. So you have siblings?
I do. I've got a sister. I've got two half-brothers.
From where?
Two step-brothers.
From your dad?
So folks split when I was, seven, eight? Dad.
Are you the oldest?
No, sister's 2 years older.
Okay, so it's you two with the
So it was us four, set. Mom, dad, sister growing up, folks split, seven, eight. Sister and mom and I went to live together. Dad and new wife went with her kid and then had two kids.
Okay.
And then mom remarried about 10 years later and brought in my stepdad, George, who's crushing it with his two kids.
Right.
So stepbrother and stepsister from that family. And then...
All Jews?
No, my stepdad converted and that's how he met my mom.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Classic Pixar story.
Yeah. He converted to... Oh, really? Did she want that?
Yeah, he was in the choir, I think. So.
Of course. Yeah. Of course, the choir.
she actually didn't want it. She told me that when they... went out that she wasn't all that impressed, but you know, Shania Twain style. But then he courted her, and they're you know, I just got back from Arizona with them, took them to Arizona to go to spring training before baseball gets going, and they're peas in a pod. They just celebrated 20 years.
Your mom and stepdad.
Yeah, I mean they should have met years earlier, but that's just how it goes.
All right, so. So you're a kid, a Jewish kid in Seattle.
Yeah. But I grew up in Lake Forest Park, which is about 25 minutes north of the city. Shoreline, I guess, if you really know the area.
Yeah.
Went to Shorecrest High School.
In the 90s.
In the 90s.
So this is when Seattle's becoming rich.
Starting to become the metropolis it is now. Yeah. Starbucks was not yet a thing. It was still had a very blue-collar vibe. It was kind of, brushed to the side. And then it was the grunge, the sports, the...
90s, that's right.
It was just coming up, I'd say, when I was like 6th, 7th grade. And,
right.
So I was just... and my...
you were eating.
I was eating my feelings, for sure, dude. I was just listening to Can You Feel the Love Tonight by Elton John.
How fat?
Let's just say that when I went on a diet in sixth grade, because my grandpa very passively was like, you can't wear sweatpants at your bar mitzvah, which is the name of a Judy Blume book. Should be. So says that to me very passively.
Well, your memoir. You got to think in terms of yourself.
You're right. I'm like mid-bite and he says that. And I'm just like, it's just like a classic. Drop the fork.
Whoa.
Or actually finish the bite.
Grandpa?
Grandpa.
Your mom's dad.
Mom's dad. Sweetheart of a gentleman.
Yeah.
But he fucking was like, hey man, like you got to... you got to stop. You got to just stop. You got to get it together. You're about to enter seventh grade.
Seventh grade.
This is where girls come into play, hopefully. Yeah. But I just really, I was an active fat kid. So it was just about stopping the eating. But I mean, like when I started to try to go on a diet, the teachers, that's how I know it was like a big deal. Because I remember at the sixth grade party.
Yeah.
They had all the snacks because everyone else had crazy metabolisms. So there's like, you know, from pizzas to pies and cookies. And I'm going for veggies in front of some moms that are chaperoning and some of the teachers.
Yeah.
And one of the teachers has the audacity to go, "Hey, Ray." She goes, "Whoa." She goes, "Carrots." She goes, "There's pizza right there, Ray."
Yeah.
"There's pizza right there. Hey, you fat fuck."
Another great title for your memoir.
"There's pizza right there, Ray." She just literally points at it, almost like gawking at me like, "Oh, you sure you don't want this delicious, sweaty meat pie?"
Yeah, and you're fat.
Yeah, and I was like, "No." And I just, so I didn't have the, you know, the chutzpah and the social awareness to like fire back at her and be like, "Maybe you should join me on this carrot escapade, Mrs. Greenland."
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Chubby.
Chubby. You know, I wish I were in hindsight, but I just kind of cowered and was like, "Oh, no, carrots actually carrots are, you know,
you did the fat kid thing.
Yeah, carrots actually taste good. It's actually better, you know, they're actually better for you, but I don't know. I love carrots, you know, just something that didn't."
You're just trying not to eat pizza?
Yeah.
That's all you took everything you got.
A fat kid going on a diet spreads like wildfire.
What do you mean it spreads like wildfire?
Well, people are just like, can't believe, because you're the fat kid.
But were you sent to a therapist?
No, just, I mean, that statement from my grandpa.
That was it?
Carried a lot of weight.
And what about your sister? How'd she turn out, the older sister?
Great now. She went away to a girl's school because she was kind of just hanging out with the
wrong crowd?
Yeah, the kids that would like, there was a kid named, I think, Jason Potts. He would like smoke cigarettes in our house and tell me my mom had big tits. Like, just those types of
that
kids.
That guy?
Yeah, that guy.
Wait, where'd he end up?
Dude.
You don't know?
Hopefully listen to this podcast.
And Jason Potts.
Hopefully running for Senate.
Smoking cigarettes in Adam Ray's house. Talking about his mom. Is that me? Is that my phone?
I think so.
Oh, shit.
Is that Jason Potts? Please tell me you got him on the line.
What the fuck is that number?
It's like, "Yo, Ray, Ray. How's Mama Ray?"
Yeah.
So
her tits holding up.
So, sister goes to a girl's school. It's just mom and I from eighth grade and through high school. So, we become best friends and enemies. It's like, I'm going through that time where I'm becoming a man. So, it's, I mean, you know, more or less at 16, 17, 18, where I'm like, "Give me some space, but like, can you wash my basketball jersey for the game tonight?"
You're such a jock.
Yeah, I was a jock that did musical theater, you know? To play Danny Zuko in Grease.
You did?
And then
quit football?
Yeah.
So wait, what year is that?
Sophomore year in high school.
Were you good at football?
Yeah, basketball and football were my sports, and I had made—
See, like, you're a sports Jew. That's the primary difference between us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I know who Hank Greenberg is.
Right. Oh, I know.
You do, because he's a Jew.
Right. Sandy Koufax is the other one.
Great.
But that's it.
That's all we got.
So you know that stuff,
yeah,
and I know everything else.
Yeah. Baruch atah.
<That's right. laughs>
There is something about the Jew that plays sports that is also almost like the fat kid going on a diet. It's like people that didn't come up a lot, but I remember one of my friend's dads once making a comment to me about losing the weight and how I would rummage through his cupboards and how he didn't have to like how he was going to save money on snacks, basically.
Right.
Which I appreciated that he was making the joke. I'd gotten, you know, I was in a better place.
Yeah.
But then he also
bully the kid?
But then he did make a weird comment one time about me being a Jew and being good at basketball.
Uh-huh.
And I just, it was my first taste of like, wow, you truly are a product of your environment. Like, I guess if he doesn't.
The mild anti-Semitism?
Yeah. Well, it was, you know, Eastern Washington again. Yeah. And, but yeah, basketball was the main sport. Football, I was good at. I was going to start varsity my sophomore year.
But you're a sports fan.
Oh, huge.
Well, what's that? Your dad did that?
Dad played sports, but mom like, was a tennis doubles champ in Ada, Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah?
But probably both of them. But also just my friends.
Sports was a thing. I didn't grow up with it at all.
Again, Seattle in the 90s had this movement of baseball and basketball that really got me into it. And then I think it was truly, and how I became a funny kid was when the fat kid thing was going on, it was like, all right, start to make people laugh, and now you're looked at as the funny kid and not the fat kid.
Right.
And so the more I could do that, so honestly, I liked sports, but I think I made a point to be more active in that stuff.
Sure.
Because it was like more rooms to play in a way. Does that make sense?
How fat were you, dude?
I think, I remember I looking down at the scale in fifth grade, and I think it was 170 or 175.
Uh-huh.
That's big.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
For like,
if the viewers could see Mark's face, looking at me like
I'm a pint of ice cream. To me, like 175 is a good weight.
Yeah, 175 is a good weight.
As a grown up.
If you're 39.
I'm 58, but yeah,
look
sure.
at you, dude. Crushing the game. Noxzema?
No, it's Cetaphil lotion.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
It's a facial lotion.
Okay.
You don't put lotion on your face?
I don't.
See, like, a little sunscreen. When's that going to happen?
I'm doing okay.
I guess so. Yeah, yeah. You're doing all right.
Yeah.
You got to take care of your skin.
I know you do.
All right.
It's a bit, I don't want to.
What?
I don't want to be, I don't know. You see though some of these like older grizzled, chiseled character actors and you're like, that seems like a cool life.
Well, maybe that's what you're headed for.
Yeah.
Because you're doing those parts.
I'll be the Jewish Gary Oldman. I am doing those parts. I haven't played any, I mean.
You're not a leading man. You're that day. There's that guy.
That day is over. There's that guy. Oh my God. I just saw the next 30 years of my hopeful career.
That guy,
there's that guy.
Who is that guy that's always in the things?
Oh, wow. You know what? I'll take it. At least you're that.
Sure. But wait, so because like when I thought I was fat, no one was calling me fat. I just thought it, except my mother.
There were nicknames. Jello Jiggler.
No, come on.
Penis and Tits Kid.
Come on.
That one I made up. But there, but the first one for real. Just fatty, chub. I mean,
penis and tits kid.
I just wanted to get you to laugh.
Right.
It's kids don't know how cruel they're being at that age. You know,
yeah, they do. That's like you know it more than anything.
But you don't know the impacts. Like
you,
days
you have
later.
No conscience about it.
Yeah,
it's like the only difference is you know when you're older because you know you're doing a bad thing and you feel bad about it. When you're a kid, you're like, who gives a fuck?
Who gives a
what
fuck?
What's up, fatty?
Yeah,
where you going, fatty?
Yeah, and in a way, I almost thank some of those kids for throwing so much shade because it did break me down.
Yeah,
where you get forced to look at
did
yourself.
You go home and cry and eat.
Oh yeah. A lot. Saved by the Bell was my best friend. The Disney Afternoon and snacks.
Really?
The food, the candy we would buy for baseball to sell to get. One day I went
out. The chocolate bars?
The chocolate bars. I remember one day I went out in the neighborhood to sell them and a dog, classic, like out of the sand lot, a dog got off his leash. One of these wild boar fucking woolly mammoth pit bull machines just chased me down the hill.
Yeah.
I dropped all the candy and sprinted as fast as I've ever ran.
Yeah.
Got up, tripped onto the front lawn, lost a shoe, and crawled into our front door, went back, picked up all the candy, didn't continue selling, went home and ate it.
Good, good. Well, you know, I guess there's some justice to that story. If that dog ate any of those, it would have killed it.
Yeah, I saved the dog. Thank you for picking up the message.
Well, I guess so.
But I ate all that stuff because eating the feelings is a real thing. But then you just get to a point where you go, all right, I got to flip it around. Too much teasing. When my friends that I were making laugh, that I thought were my friends, got in the game of the poking fun, then that's when it was like, all right, I got to make a switch.
So
but then I was funny kid. Because of
funny kid
the
and
fat
sports kid.
Yes. So and in both. I was being funny with the theater kids and funny with the sports kids and just kind of in both worlds.
So you were a theater jock, but when it came down to choose, you went with the theater.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's evolved.
Well, yeah, because I mean, hey, man, Danny Zuko, Grease, sophomore year of high
school. Getting a lot more attention for than what position were you playing?
Offensive line.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, how many 6'1 offensive line Jews have you ever heard of in the NFL?
And also, how long is that going to last? You weren't going to the NFL.
Bro, yeah. You sound like my mom. She was very, she was like, I mean, she told me, though, because I had to quit. My coach was a stereotypical football coach, like out of Friday Night Lights, what have you. And I had to walk down the long hallway to his office and tell him I'm not going to play football this year. After he told me I'm starting varsity as a sophomore.
I'm a song and dance man, coach.
Mark,
what?
I tried to make a joke out of it. I go, I can't memorize the playbook this year because I got to memorize the lyrics to Grease Lightning. He paused, took a beat, said, get the fuck out of my office.
No.
Then he brought his kids to the Sunday matinee where I'm in full leather jacket and makeup and just goes, you weren't bad.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you like that?
Yeah.
You made the right choice.
And we've since reconnected, and he's like, you know, now he came out and saw me, and I was in Hawaii with Adam Devine, and he goes, oh, I guess it worked out. And he was like a different person.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Like, time goes by, you're like, wow, you as this guy. And then we got to talking, and he came on my podcast, and we got
him
into
on the podcast.
He came on my podcast about last night, which you've been on when your car got towed. And
how the fuck did that happen?
Remember that?
Every time I turn on Laurel, which is all a lot,
you think of it.
Yeah, because I'm like, what was I thinking?
You parked in the space. It still baffles me to this day.
I parked in front of a driveway to a fucking apartment building.
Dude, that should have been the moment that you were put into a home.
Yeah.
It's amazing you're still here.
What time was it, early or something? I'm up early. I don't know how it happened.
It was not even time for the 5 o'clock news, dude.
I
it
know.
It was still daylight.
No,
people
I don't
were
even
still
know what
having
the fuck happened. I thought
appetizers.
It was during the day.
Yeah.
I cannot figure it out still.
I think the excitement of being on the podcast
was it. Yeah, it's probably me going like, where the fuck is this? All right,
I'm doing the guy who's on that thing.
Look, there's a thing right across the street.
That was cool, though. People don't know this. That was a very big deal because when I met you at the Just for Laughs Festival through our mutual friend Ryan Singer, and then you popped around to do other spots in Montreal.
Yeah.
And I remember you were, your manager was going to bail, so you looked at me and were like,
Olivia,
you want right? to bounce? Yeah. You go, you want to bounce around to these spots with me? And I was like, yeah. And then we walked around and all Montreal, it was out of a Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan movie. We just walked around, talked shop. You treated me like you know me for 20 years. We got back. I think I brought up my podcast prematurely. And then at the end, and like a fucking amateur, but not too early, like 8 minutes into the chat. After we had a couple, I'd said something goofy and you thought it wasn't terrible. And then we kept walking the streets. Yeah. But it's like, we're walking through beautiful Montreal.
Yeah, it's nice.
You're doing your spots. Also, you were crushing in your spots. Oh, had one of the sets not gone well, I don't think we'd be here right now.
No, you would have been, you know, I would have been like, I got to go.
Dude, you wouldn't have finished.
Yeah.
So then we get back to the big Just for Laughs bar where everyone hangs out.
Right.
And we walk back. And it was like a fun thing. And you looked at me and you go, oh, that was a good time. And you go, I'll do your podcast. Like, bug me when we get back. And I was like, wow. I was like, this is what this festival is about.
That's
truly.
Right. It's booking Marc Maron on my podcast so he gets his car towed. How long before I went on?
And then we got back. And I think, and I've told this story just to a handful of buddies. I think maybe 2 weeks later, I see you at the store and I go, Mark. And you go, hey. And I was like, okay. I go right back to it, right back, as if Montreal was just a fart in the wind. It was a NyQuil dream that never happened.
Didn't want to walk around alone.
That's all it was to you. Oh, I respect that, though. But
no,
then, and
no,
then,
it's like, look at this large Jewish guy. Pretty funny. Seems excited.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. If that's one thing I am.
How long did it take me to do the podcast? A year?
3 years.
I'm sorry.
Hey, no, dude, you know what?
It was the right time.
Things happen.
Everything happens in this world for a reason.
Doesn't it, though?
Sure. And I got punished for icing you. My car got towed.
Yeah. I didn't look at it like that, but for sure, that was karma.
Yeah.
It was podcast karma.
Sure.
But you know what it was? It was like, I think I'd mentioned a few things here and there. And then, you know, that's one thing, as you know. I mean, I don't know how long it took you to book Clooney and Obama. Like, are you just shooting them text messages or like-
All the time.
The follow-up.
George won't leave me alone. What are you talking about?
That's who it was called.
Yeah.
You know, there's a balance between like when you're trying to get somebody on, right? To being proactive and being a little bit of a nudnik, right?
Yeah. Nudnik, good one. Yeah. I don't know if it's the right definition of nudnik, but I like nudge.
It's like a nudge. Yeah. And so with that, with you, it was trying to find that balance. And then I remember I saw you. And then also we started to become chummier at the store.
Right.
And then once that started to happen, I go, oh, that's that was a necessary element.
I think I just started to watch you. And I'm like, oh, this guy's fucking hammering this shit. Okay, he's like doing the job.
Okay, cool.
So, like, you know, I'm like, he knows how to do this. So at some point in the interim there, I'm like, no, he's a real comic, this guy. So-
That, hey, by the way, that's how it should be. I mean, you know, there has to be that respect.
You're going up in those early spots, just like, wow. Just like, boosh, 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 boosh.
Trying to get the
There
nine-
you go. Now you're an audience. Fuck you.
Did you ever do those early spots?
Somewhere.
Yeah.
Not there.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I mean, I was a belly room act when I was a doorman there. I mean, I know what it's like to perform for no one there.
Yeah.
When I was a kid. But yeah, I've done my share of cold opening. Yeah.
Does the store...
Not there, necessarily.
Do you yearn for those days when... I mean, even when I remember I started there, I think in 2012 or 2011.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, a Tuesday was not what a Tuesday is now. Right,
right. Right.
Do you yearn for those days or do you...
The 10 people days?
Yes.
I only yearn for them because there was a time where I was terrified of the original room. And when there was less stakes, where you just like go up for 15 scattered people, like who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
This isn't scary.
Right.
It's not going to be on me. Who can determine whether anyone does well with this shit?
Yeah.
So you just had more freedom. But at some point, the fear went away. Like, I literally remember being terrified to go up there because you couldn't see the audience. That was a big obstacle for me. And, like, I remember when I was trying to get the hang of that place, and I still had ghosts from when I was a doorman there, just getting up there and not really having a bearing in terms of what the audience looks like was a kind of a heavy for me.
Yeah.
But now it's like I live there. Like, both rooms. I don't give a shit. Mm. You know, what are they going to do? Tell me I can't work there anymore?
Yeah.
I mean, that was ultimately...
Actually, just got a text saying, you're banned from the store.
Why can't I get any of these noises to stop,
got
ever?
A text from...
No, it's... it's
Jason
like, Potts. It's Tommy.
It's Tommy.
Tommy was... He's telling me I can't do any more spots.
Do you need to see people in the at least like the first few rows in any venue?
No, it's better if I don't. But it's helpful if I do. It depends, because
that's surprising to me, because you feel I connect.
Yeah, I have to. It's better if I don't, only because I'm going to end up looking at one guy. It's a lot of wait for the one guy.
Yeah, it is.
If I just walk in on one guy, the whole fucking show. I can't look out.
Right.
But I did learn that in the original room a little bit. But the point being that until I got the hang of that place, it was always just terrifying.
Yeah. I think there is something about tackling that fear of the store, because everyone has it. That's what's great about it. I don't think anyone is ever performed there without some window of where you are.
Has to do with comfort, though, in terms of, like, you know, initially you're afraid because you think, like, you're always auditioning.
Yeah.
But, like, that's over for
that's
me.
That's over, yeah.
And I imagine for you as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, then it's just up to you. Like, the original room, who cares? The main room, for some reason, can really go south on you.
Yeah.
And you don't even know why.
Yeah.
You know, you're up there, it's like a full house, and you're like, is there something wrong with, my fly open? What the fuck is happening?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
After those first couple of jokes, you're like, oh, this is going to be a slog, and I'm not going to be able to get out.
When I have seen you just slay in the main room, sitting on the stool,
yeah,
it's like, because, you know, I think I've sat on a stool a few times and really dug it. And the first stand-up I feel like I truly absorbed was Patrice O'Neill at the Punchline in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And it was just mind-boggling. And so people that do that command, and I don't nervously pace anymore like I did when I first started, but you're
I got some energy around.
Yeah,
just slugging it out.
Yeah. So to watch you just so, I don't know if poised is the right word, but just still and just and comfy like that is I don't know if it's that I want to be able to do it or I just admire it. It's like for me, guitar, right?
Sure.
I took a few lessons in college. I can play some enough chords to write a goofy song for a friend's wedding.
Yeah.
But I'm not trying to master it because I look at people that do. Even yourself at the goddamn Comedy Jam, you go, oh, see, that's, I don't want to do it because look at people who actually try and give a fuck.
I don't think I'm doing it. I'm good at it, but anyways, it's great. So you can play a few chords and you don't close with it.
My second, show at the store when I was doing the Bringer shows, doing the Vargas and Kathy Lewis shows. And I closed with, I had 6 minutes, and the last three were a song. And I remember going, okay. And then somebody said to me, you're either the guitar comic or you're not.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay.
And then you look around like, how many are there anymore?
Yeah.
And why aren't there any?
Yes. And
it's not good.
Yeah. And then Mitzi, and I showcased for Mitzi, and I didn't do it, but I was wearing a backwards hat. And she just goes, why are you wearing a hat? And I was like, that's your feedback?
Yeah. She told me I needed to wear a scarf. You had to take something off. I had to put something on.
Are you serious?
Yeah, Paul went, you should wear a scarf.
That's kind of a compliment,
I guess. I don't know. Who the fuck knows what she was thinking? All I know is that, like, whatever she said, we'd all do it. Okay, I'll take the hat off.
Of course. Took it off right there.
Threw it away in front of her. But wait. So, the sitting down thing. You know where that evolved out of?
Where?
I used to do it when I was bombing. Because I would just lean into bombing. If I wasn't having a good set, I'd fucking sit down and go on longer.
Yeah.
But also, I always thought the guys that sat down, like the old school guys, even Cosby on himself, and like, you know, Shelley Berman or any of those old guys, this idea that stand-ups didn't sit down is ridiculous.
Right.
They were always sitting down.
Yes.
You know, and like people who say this, like, shut the fuck up. Look at these idiots. Like a Marin in his stool. What do you think the stool's up there for?
Yeah.
It's always up there.
Not to hold your water.
You think it's just for your dumb bottled water being there since the 50s? Fucking idiot. Talking to nobody. So making up a person to yell at.
Did you ever rehearse your bits in the mirror? When you first started?
You did. I did.
Of course I did.
No, I didn't do it. Never did it.
Just got on stage immediately with your thoughts and just said, yes. I'm going to see what happens.
Yes. My thoughts, and maybe like very early on when I did an open mic or two in college, a couple Woody Allen jokes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's trust. You've always had that in yourself, I feel
like. It's not trust. I was terrified. I used to spend like days when I was doing open mics for a fucking week. I was out of my mind with my piece of paper.
Man.
It's just me and a piece of paper going, oh, fuck. But no, I never, I didn't have no sense.
Yeah. I guess that's the actor in me. I would rehearse them for my alcoholic roommate.
Yeah, but I didn't know. I didn't always know what they were. I mean, I remember once in college, I did what I was going to do at an open mic, you know, for friends, and it was the worst. The worst. I can't look at myself when I see myself on television, let alone in a mirror. What are you making, mugging and shit to yourself?
Yeah, I mean, it was just, I guess it was just to try to calm the nerves.
Oh, but wait, what's the gap, though? So you're doing Grease in high school.
So yeah, sophomore year, and then that play just ignites the love for performing.
Hearing the people.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Also, it was a mix of the, again, the adulation, but really the fun of it. Like, it all goes back to that. Like, all of this right here with you, doing shows this weekend. I'm going to fucking Batavia, Illinois, the Vegas of the Midwest. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's all fun still. So that's where the collaborative efforts for the play was like that time at Shorecrest High School and the group we kind of had that did five or six shows together is so, influential in just what I'm doing now.
Formative.
Formative, for sure. And it's a roll of the dice. I've seen the program a few years since and a few years prior when I was there.
High school?
Yeah. And it's such a luck of the draw of the classes you come up with. And it, just like in Comedy Force, right? The people that we come up with and get to be around and share stories and stages and the grind with. It's so, you know, even my friend group in school, it's like my mom, when my folks wanted to move to Oklahoma to be, her folks were like, well, just come down here. We'll help you get a job. Stay with us for a little bit. Save some cash. Oklahoma. My mom, to her credit, which is why she's, you know, my hero and just the greatest and did four jobs as a single mom to make sure I could, you know, sell candy bars and get chased by dogs and try to lose some weight from running down the hill.
Yeah.
And she.
Stand up for carrots.
She goes, I'm not going to move because Adam's got his friends here, which is huge. If I'd gone to Oklahoma, who the fuck knows where I'd be?
Who knows?
Maybe I'd be running Bricktown Comedy Club. I just gave him a shout out. They never booked
Maybe
me.
Maybe not. Maybe you'd be riding a horse.
Yeah.
Maybe a whole different. You'd be working on an oil rig.
Who's to say? But stayed there, stayed on the track.
You
with
probably
my friends.
Have more indigenous friends.
1,000%. Yeah. It'd be a more diverse group for sure. But yeah, so then the performing bug just then led to everything. And then in high school, it was like my buddies and I ran the high school news show. They had seniors our sophomore year, basically. They found out a way to broadcast into all the rooms a weekly show that was like news, weather, sports. Mm. And here's the clubs you can sign up for. And there's a dance on Friday.
Oh,
get your thing in.
So you could get a few jokes in?
Well, we took it over and turned it. But it was 5 minutes every Friday, maybe even four. By the time I graduated, because we did it sophomore, junior, and senior year, it was a 22-minute sketch show that played at the beginning of every class every Friday.
Yeah.
Most teachers wouldn't even air it because they're like, this is fucking 20 minutes of class.
Yeah.
But again, that helped kind of, kickstart all of the performing and acting. And then stand-up, I did two open mics at Giggles in Seattle. Did you ever play there?
Of course. Yeah. I recorded two CDs there.
Oh, my God.
It's
the first place I did stand-up. And then it was Jiggles for a little bit, the strip club.
No, I know. Terry. Fucking Terry. Terry Taylor.
Ran everything.
Terry Taylor. But yeah, you make that sound like a good thing. Like it was the worst.
No. Sorry. Let me take two. Let me do it again.
But wait.
Ran everything.
Well, he sold you your ticket. He made you your drink. He seated you and then he did the 5 minutes.
And he yelled at your mom when she said, hey, can you seat us?
That guy was weird. But for some reason... He was weird. Did you ever go up to his apartment and he show you his collection of action figures?
What?
Yeah.
Why did I say that with such a surprise?
Because
tone?
You assumed a blowjob on somebody's part was next. But no, the weirdest thing about his collection is that like they were arranged like they were at a store. They were in the containers on racks.
Doesn't every action figure aficionado have them organized as if a store is going to come in and appraise them?
Oh, good. Look, they're still in the package.
He-Man and Raphael.
You should just open a store here. but I like the idea what you're saying about the people that you hang out with.
We don't think about that enough.
Well, I mean, I do all the time because I know who my guy, I knew who they were, who was I was eating with in New York at 2 a.m. You know, it was me and Ross and CK and Attell, Silverman, Todd Barry.
That's fucking crazy. Now, but now how about pre-stand-up, though? Do you have those friends, whether it's high school, middle school, that you go, wow, these guys wore I could bounce stuff off of, but they were also funny in their own right enough to help curate the skill set.
I wasn't as funny. I was kind of a smart ass in high school.
Right.
And junior high more, but then I hung out with some guys in high school who were, I think, funnier than me. And then in college, you know, I think I got funnier again.
Yeah.
But I was more of a smart ass in Hebrew school than anywhere else, I think, probably.
That's where you found your voice?
Well, that's where I made teachers cry. So that's kind of my voice.
In a good way?
I don't know.
No. You weren't killing?
No, I was like, I was just relentless being disruptive.
That's awesome. I would love to see the Wonder Years version. I mean, if we...
It's the worst.
If we can bring Maron back, maybe we can get some
like... It was just like this poorly parented kid that was unmanageable and, you know, causing trouble in the class.
But
I got kicked out of a private school, and they wrote a letter to my parents saying, Mark has the wrong kind of leadership qualities.
Oh, my God. That's specific.
That's my memoir. That's my next book. The wrong kind. That's what I'm a comedian. The wrong kind of leadership qualities.
I mean, that's degenerate territory.
Yeah, for sure.
The wrong kind of leadership.
Yeah, the wrong kind of leadership qualities.
But let's break that down.
We suggest a military school for Mark.
Yikes. What kid, though, has any leadership qualities?
Some of them.
I guess.
Look at your sports captains and bullshit like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you're right.
Anyone who's in a club.
And it really should be the people that are getting laughs.
I guess. No, they're the rogues.
Yeah,
yeah, they're just
right.
Trying not to, you know, get in too much trouble. They're just trying to charm their way through life.
So you talk back to the teachers?
Yeah. I got one of them popped me in the face once.
Oh, my God.
So Seattle, that's okay. So weird. I forgot about that reality of it. So did you go
started
to college?
Started there. I went to USC out here. Was in the acting school at USC.
You were?
Oh, yeah.
For 4 years?
For 4 years I'd say maybe a year and a half paid for with, you know, academic stuff. And
yeah.
Then my grandparents helped me out with a semester. My mom did a single mom financial aid thing we just paid off my loans probably 5 years ago.
And that was a good school, right?
Great school. Great
and
acting
then you
program.
Back to Seattle?
No, stayed out here. So came out here in 01, graduated from high school in June in Seattle from Shortcrest, and then came to L.A. in August.
So how'd you start comedy in Seattle?
So right before I left, I did one open mic just to go,
at Giggles,
just to feel like I'd been on stage before I come to L.A., because for whatever reason...
But you wanted to do comedy?
Loosely at that point. SNL was a dream for a while.
Okay.
And so I knew a lot of those guys had stand-up backgrounds.
Right.
And so when I got to L.A., the acting school the BFA program was rigorous, class 9 to 6, and then a show 6 to 11, and then I was in a fraternity, so I had no...
Of course you were in a fraternity.
Yeah, but barely around.
Why would you even think to join one?
More friends, meet more people.
All right.
Guess what? The things that suck about fraternities suck, and I acknowledge that.
Right.
Did I make a lot of friends? Yeah.
Right.
Were some of the guys, was I the funny guy? Yeah. Would I dress up in characters and do fun things to the pledges instead of like take out my, the shit that I had on these people that I don't know?
Uh-huh.
No, I would do goofy shit. And
you don't have to defend it.
I think I do.
You're a frat guy. That's what.
Yeah. Do I like to party? Do I like to have a good time? Yeah. But the negative parts of the fraternal world, I do not embody.
Okay.
And I do not support. There is a way to do that whole world without a lot of the dumb shit that guys who come
maybe
into that.
Maybe should be like some
of I do feel like
thing.
I'm running for office.
Yeah, this is something you should work on. Changing
and allow these kids to pick carrots over pizza. There is something about that experience that was... Also instrumental.
You still friends with those guys?
A handful.
Okay.
Some of them have done amazing things. There are some that are tied. I mean, look, being at USC from small town, suburban Washington, I'd be in school and I'd be, you know, you're around, first of all, you know, people with money that you didn't know was possible. Being in the frat one night, being like, I need to go make some copies for this paper. Someone's like, oh, go use this kid's store, this kid's dad's store. I go, oh, he's got a copy store open now? He's like, yeah, Kinko's.
Yeah.
That type of shit.
Yeah, yeah. So you knew the Kinko's era?
You said that like you got kicked out of the frat and didn't get a chance to chum it up with him.
Up.
I did know the Kinko's era, yeah.
Yeah.
I think he went on Shark Tank with him and his brother, is what I heard.
Boy, that's
and
a big payoff.
And they got ridiculed because they were coming from money. Somebody sent me the clip a little bit ago. So USC is formative with the acting stuff, and then I start doing YouTube videos, and then stand-up, and then I graduate, and I work at Universal Studios as a tour guide.
Wait, you're rushing. So you do one spot before you go to college.
One spot.
And then you go and you do fraternity.
I do a couple frat parties stand-up wise, and I study abroad in London my junior year to do Shakespeare and all that stuff. And I do
so
a couple.
Real acting, full acting.
Oh, yeah.
Shit.
Full on.
Yeah.
So the program was great. I did a few bar shows while I was out there because it was just something I did. I'd done.
What's a bar show?
a bar show in London. Like,
okay.
I don't know where they
not a
do
club?
Stand-up. Like okay. Like not like a nice like a Virgil out here, but like a true bar.
Okay.
And it just where stand-up was and somebody who...
You were out there for a semester? Or a year?
A semester and a half, yeah.
Okay.
And about 6 months.
Doing the Shakespeare.
Doing Shakespeare plays, seeing plays, just, again, a full program. All the kids that I knew that were out there studying abroad had class Monday through Wednesday. I fucked up and did a program that was class Monday through Friday, so I couldn't travel every weekend like most of the kids I knew were doing.
That's why they go.
Yeah. But Wednesday, but yeah, I went for an actual education, but went to Amsterdam, and that was great. Ate a McFlurry in front of a girl in the red light district and danced with her simultaneously. Yeah. I'll never forget that.
That was it? That was the extent of it?
Yeah, I wish this story had a better ending. I wish I could say I brought the McFlurry into the room. No. She gave me a discount.
There's nothing good about that. I was in Amsterdam and I looked at them and I went up and said,
"You got to look."
Yeah, but it's like I don't know. It's kind of sad, isn't it?
It's very sad.
All right.
I think what was more sad is that I felt like I was taunting her with my delicious treat.
Oh,
I don't
really?
Even think she wanted sex from me.
Yeah,
she looked at my
She definitely didn't want it from me. Maybe.
I love that I just created this idea that they're in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Look at that they yeah. want. Yeah,
look no, at that kid. Get him in here.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
But okay, so after college,
the college
you
got I graduated,
acted and you live here. You say, well, "I'm going to do
stayed.
It. I'm going to do the acting."
Oh yeah. Well, the program was just so rigorous, and at that point, I truly had stripped away all my musical theater. Bullshit and felt like I had, you know, at least some tools to start. But again, you do not have much to build on when you graduate. So I worked at a casting office for 3-4 years and then was doing open mics and was in acting class and was doing the YouTube videos. And
what YouTube videos?
I mean, just making sketches with my buddies.
So you're doing open mics at where?
Ha Ha Store, Laugh Factory. And now, then work, like, so I'd work a full day at Universal, right? Like, well, I was Wolverine for a little bit, then hosted the Fear Factor live show, and then the tour guide.
So these are acting jobs.
I mean, that's why I loved working at the theme park.
So you're
flexing that muscle.
Right, you're Wolverine.
Wolverine, not so much. I got in trouble for improvising a lot as Wolverine, because my boss was like, well, just doing jokes, too.
Yeah,
So then when I was a 1940s cop, fucking full range to do and say whatever.
But what were you doing? How'd you fuck up Wolverine?
I mean, I took out like a squirt gun at one point and was shooting a bunch of tourists in the back. And like, she was like, "You can't have a squirt gun as Wolverine. Like, that doesn't add up."
Well, you got blade fingers.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. And then I would say, I would make jokes too. Yeah. And they were just like, "Wolverine's not funny."
Oh, yeah. So the limitations of Wolverine at the theme park were holding you back a little.
I think so. I ran over a kid's foot.
As Wolverine?
Yeah.
With what kind of vehicle?
An ATV.
Oh.
3 times a day, myself, Storm, Captain America, Green Goblin, and Spider-Man would parade around the park.
Yeah.
And we'd pull out in these ATVs, and a kid ran up, and he wanted to take a picture, and I was holding up the caboose of this big party train, and I take the picture. I'm like, "Hurry up, Bob, we gotta do it real quick, you know?" And I know, it's like Wolverine's right here. And I look over and I think the kid's gone, and I rev it up and I take off and I feel my wheel go up and over something. And so I turn back at the kid because I stop and I was like, "Oh shit," sobbing.
Yeah.
So now I'm just rummaging through my brain of like, what do I say? Do I say,
do
"Hang in there, bub"?
Do you kill him?
Oops. Do I fucking kill him? So there's
no way.
Do I stab him with my plastic claw? Yeah. I don't say anything because I couldn't think of what to say.
Yeah.
So I end up just staring him down and driving away. So this kid's, because I looked at him and I was like, he was crying and I was like, what do I say?
Is he okay? You don't even know. Did he break his feet?
All I know is that people would come to the Comedy Store that night when I would do the potluck and hold up pictures and go, "Hey, we took a picture with you. I thought we recognized you." And I was like, "Hey man, can you just let me have this?"
Yeah, yeah.
Can you not bring...
Shh.
That's so funny, dude.
Shh. Yeah, hey.
Cause a scene here,
that's
man.
My other life.
Tommy doesn't know that. That's my other life. Oh yeah, man. But then Bobby Lee took me on the road, and out of the Universal gig finally.
Oh, okay. So you're doing enough open mics, and you're putting together like 10-15.
Putting together 10-15, and just going for it. The Ha Ha.
Well, when
was
you open
really
for Bobby, you got to do 45, don't you?
Minimum. Hey, Mark. Minimum. There were nights where he was like, "I'm not feeling it. Do an hour." And I was like, What?
He's going to do 20?
Yeah. Oh, man. God bless Bobby Lee, because that guy fucking was very, gave me a lot of great work.
That's
tough
opening gig, but where the headliner's like, you're going to have to cover most of the time.
I think it was San Jose. I'm not even joking. I did 45.
At the Improv?
And he goes, I'm doing, I think he did 18 minutes.
Yeah.
And guess what?
Yeah.
No one had a problem with it.
They loved seeing him.
They loved it.
Yeah.
But so,
well,
yeah.
It's not like you're up there tanking. You can do it.
I think I had, I mean, look, that was one of the things too, having more time.
But you also know that they're sort of like, why is he keep going?
Thank you. You think I wanted to be up there that long?
Well, they're like,
20 or 25 of just pounding away, I felt good on. And then it was like the extra 10, 15, sometimes 20 people are looking around like, why the fuck is it?
Right?
Yeah. Is it, where's Bobby? Is everything okay? The haha gave me a lot of work that wasn't bringer shows or open mics.
And so Bobby takes you on the road.
Bobby takes me on the road. And so I'm getting a lot of, and I remember Tommy would, it was before I got past, and he was like, he told me I'm a road comic. And I'm like, what do you want me to do? I'm getting a chance. Cause he's like, you're never here to do Sundays, Mondays.
Yeah.
Do the 3 minutes here. And I was like, I mean, I come hang out every other day.
3 minutes here. The 3 minutes.
Yeah, and I had to tell him without being a dick. I was like, look, man, the amount of times I stay and I sign up, and then you tell me that people pop in and it's not going to happen tonight, it takes a toll on you. And so then I go, well, fuck it. I'll go to the haha Tuesday through Thursday where they're giving me stage time on
like real time.
Yeah, real time, and then go on the road with Bobby and try to build it up that way. Because that's what you find, and I'm sure you know you could talk circles about this, where it's like there's no fucking blueprint, but you... I had this idea of what the blueprint was. It was like, okay, go to these shows and do this and then try to get in here and hang out here. And
yeah.
But it's like, at some point it was like, I just need to get stage time where I can get it. I mean, whether it was driving to fucking San Diego to do Lestat's and then driving right back so I could strap on the claws the next morning.
Yeah.
And then...
strap on the claws.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. They took them. That was sad too when they finally fired me to take the claws back. That
Your
was
plastic claws?
Yeah. Oh. They fell off one day in a group picture because I clinged them together, and I still have nightmares of the kids who gasped because they thought that Wolverine had just been dismembered.
Ugh.
And
then
part of you wants to be like, hey man, fucking, this isn't real. That guy's name is Chad. He drives an Escalade with a bumper sticker that says, nobody's ugly after 2 a.m. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's not Captain America.
Yeah.
But you don't want to break the facade or the fourth wall because these kids really think you're the real people.
Come on, they do not. How old are they?
Oh man, it spans the gamut. I mean, I've talked to, I talked to Dave Matthews in full character one time with his family after a show, and I broke character, and he was like, because he was like, is there a place to get a drink around here? And I was like, when I was a New York cop, and I go, oh yeah, sure, it's a little Irish bar right there. I walk you there. You seem like a guy who can throw a couple back, and I'm plus you're here with your kids, and that can be a lot, just whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, so we start walking, and then I just go, hey man, I go, I was at the show last night, fucking great. And he goes, oh shit, he goes, can you break character? I go, dude, you think I want to fucking be here? And he starts laughing. And then he wanted to buy me drinks in the bar. And I was like, I would love nothing more. But,
couldn't drink with Dave Matthews because you
couldn't get fired from, if I was fired from a 1940s New York cop theme park job, I think it would have sent me into a spiral.
So so you quit the thing and you're doing the comedy. When did the acting start? Because you've done a lot of shit. Like, you're that guy.
Yeah, were you about to go down the list, start reading a couple credits? No, don't do that. People don't care.
No, they care.
Do they?
But what have you done?
My fiance did tell me to start telling on stage during this Pam and Tommy run to at least have people say that, because she goes, because I'm really bad at that. When people are like, what do you,
time I think I saw you was in Eliza's movie.
Oh, cool.
Because that was like a real part.
Yeah. And the Hacks, you came up to me and
Hacks cool. too. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You were the shitty club comic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm starting to see you around, but you were in a lot of shit before that.
Yeah, Paul Feig gave me quite a bit of love and the Heat and small parts in Ghostbusters.
I think I
and
saw
Spy.
That. I didn't see those.
It's fine. And did you see According to Jim in 2007?
No.
I was one episode of that.
Oh, good for you.
I'll send you the link.
Yeah, thanks.
And
just
acting
your part though. Just give me your part.
Acting is what
I came
here for.
Send me your reel. You got your reel?
Don't joke about that. I will. No, acting is what I came here for.
I know.
Which is why I like
And usually that'd be a strike against you.
Yeah.
For me. The comedy's just so I can get some parts.
I know.
But then you got stuck. Then you got stuck as a comic.
It's, well, there's, you know what's so funny? Do people ever ask you? Because you have been.
Anything that I got, I was in my mid-40s. No one's asking me anything.
Yeah, but look at what you've done.
No, I know, but I mean, no one's saying he just got in it to be an actor.
Right, of course. But how do you feel with it now? Well, actually, I guess stand-up was, you were had dug in quite a bit before acting
I'm still not that big of an actor, but I'm a stand-up.
But okay, so when I started, it was acting, and then I started doing stand-up, and now they're synonymous, and now I can't, if you ask me to pick, which people do, I will lean stand-up.
Yeah, because it seems like it's just your nature. I mean, the thing about acting, really, especially when you're doing it how you're doing it, which is you're working a lot, but it's a job, you know, it's a job.
Yes.
And you don't have a lot of choice.
Yes.
And you have to figure out how to make it a great job because it's your dream.
Yes.
But a lot of times it's just sort of like, all right, you're on camera for 30 seconds and then it's like, all right, we're just going to relight. And you're like, fuck, that's 3 hours.
Yes.
And then you come back and do the same 30 seconds.
Yes.
And you're like, all right, so you're gonna do this again tomorrow.
Yes.
You know, whatever.
Finding ways to be motivated and to enjoy it. But this is why stand-up is so fucking incredible.
But just, like, you do hacks though, and then it's a great little part.
Yes.
And you do, right.
That gets you a little exposure. The Pam and Tommy thing is a little
but you
bump.
You like doing it. Right.
I love it. I also, back to the theater stuff. I love the collaborative.
Right.
Even Paul Feig just threw me a little part in his Netflix movie that's with Charlize Theron and Ben Kingsley, and even working with him, it was like just the trying to figure it out. Figure it out.
Yeah.
And we did season 2 of Young Rock in Australia, but here's like a great point of why I can't just, you know, I was like, all right, take a little break from stand up. Take a few weeks off while you're shooting to not do sets. Man, I had probably my longest day on a Friday, but the young comics who I become friends with, this kid Zach, was like, hey, I got you an hour spot at Sit Down Comedy Club in Brisbane, which is like an actual comedy club, which was an hour away from me. And I was like, fuck, I can't do a full day. I'd already been up from 3 to do some other shit and then shot all day. And I get off and I was like, I got so jonesed to go do it. And so I took an hour Uber and went there. And it was awesome. I'm so glad I did. But also, that got me through the shoot day because I knew I had that waiting for me.
Right.
As a reward almost.
Yeah.
And so I guess
it
that's
was good in Brisbane. I didn't love
it was
Brisbane.
Awesome.
It was good.
Yeah. I mean, this club, the stage is real high. The crowd was a little older, but yeah, fun. I mean, again, it was, there were some rattier bar shows I did, but they love American comedy.
No, I do okay, I think, in Sydney and Melbourne, but Brisbane was sort of like, I don't know, it's like Texas.
Yeah, I did say, I did, because I remember when I got on stage, they said, thank God you're not Marc Maron, and then when I got off, they said something else.
Sure.
You know, anti-Semitic, but they not for me to pass on to you. So.
Yeah, right. They were like, thank God you're not Marc Maron, but it'd be better if you weren't a Jew, but you tried.
But yeah.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, and that made you feel good.
I felt great.
That's all I can do is try. Well, they like their voices.
They do. Hilarious. I do a lot of voices. Yeah, I do voice. I like the act outs.
That's so funny because your first impulse was like, fuck you. And then you somehow managed to stifle that.
Yeah, I own like, that.
The little
but you know
fat kid that you are.
I'm trying to get, dude, yeah. I'm trying to get, the fat kid will never go away. I'm trying
to take it. The fat kid will take it.
Dude, Burr came on my podcast and he goes, he had called, there was this great moment where he butt dialed me.
Yeah.
And he's never called me.
Right.
Do you ever have someone in your life like this where you go, we've got a text relationship, never called.
Never. And then it rings.
So I look down, it rings, it says Bill Burr. And I go, oh man. And I'm telling Burr this. And I go, this happened yesterday. And he's sitting there listening. And I go, man, I kind of sat up. I kind of, you know, fixed my chops and kind of, you know, tightened my collar. And he goes, I just saw your whole childhood. He goes, you really were the fat kid, weren't you? Your snacks were your friends. He goes, go on. Yeah. Okay. And so how did I disappoint you? Because it wasn't really me calling you. And it was such a light bulb shining on me.
Yeah.
But when did you, let me ask you this, because I'm just going back, because it's still, I'm still hanging on you saying I do that I do voices. And I'm trying to, in this year, dig deeper into, I guess, myself and me and Adam Ray and just the stuff that I've gone through. And I'm doing it in chunks.
Yeah.
Is there a point when you, like, look, I've got a white rapper brother-in-law named Dirte. There's a lot of material there.
Sure.
A lot of stuff that I want to talk about that I feel
your
like...
Your older sister?
My sister, yeah.
Oh,
my
yeah?
My the sister I grew up with.
Yeah.
Married a white rapper brother-in-law named Dirte.
Huh.
YouTube is music. He's got some hits out there.
Okay. He's got good... That's a good plug-in. So what are you asking me?
At what point do you just go, fuck it, fuck these... The feelings of the people... Yeah. That in my family, I just need to talk about this stuff.
Well, but you can talk about it. Like, you know, I throw my parents under the bus pretty hard and they can take it. But like,
see, I don't know if my, I do with my mom in a certain way, but I think she can't.
But you love her. You love her.
Yes.
But your dad.
I've got some stuff about my stepmom, right? Woman who that my dad married that is probably not as funny. But sure. It's like,
what's going on with your dad?
He's chilling right now. He was a doctor, just retired from 50 years of being a...
Will you get along with him?
Great. And I think because we didn't really have much when I got when I was younger.
Right.
And then wanted to have the relationship when I got older, yeah.
And so you had the relationship when you're older.
Yeah.
And you don't resent the fact that you didn't have him around because...
No, because my mom crushed it. And yeah. It was like, again, things happen how they're supposed... I wouldn't sure. be this if yeah. I...
Right.
I just started breaking down crying.
If he was around?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, it's like she played both parts, and I'm fine with that. You know,
yeah.
I don't know. I think it's almost greedy when people want two parents.
Sure,
one's enough.
Yeah, I think you're probably better off raising yourself.
Thank you.
In my particular situation, I think they were obstacles. To be honest, giving me to a couple more responsible people would have been great.
Did you get to a point though where you truly just were like on stage and you felt like I guess almost a release in the way you were talking about what was happening with you and in your life and making it funny but not feeling like you were...
Well, there's like, you know, there's an excitement to it. And, yeah. and then, you know, to polish it. I mean, certainly, you know, coming from the point of view of like if you were to talk about being a fat kid or you to talk about, you know...
Should that, do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but also, you know, making a choice over football, you know, to do song and dance
yeah.
stuff. Did you talk about that?
No.
I mean, like there's a lot of stuff there that yeah. if you wanted to be, but it's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
And you're like a guy, because you go up early or because you open, you feel like you have to kill right away. Mm. So at some point, you know, you're going to have to let that go and really workshop shit.
Well, that's why the road I love.
Yeah.
Because when I'm doing an hour or hour
yeah, you
20.
Yeah, you got to pretend like you have the time.
Yes. Oh my God, I'm just walking into these fucking just slam city, and you're the mayor. You're quick. This is why you host your podcast.
No.
And not just a guest
on it. But I'm not kidding, though, because that's how you write.
You've also only seen me early. You haven't seen me. You didn't see me in the late store spots, or even now when I'll still do 11, 15, 11.
No, I'm just busting your balls. But I mean, even when you go on the road, but that's what it's for. If you're killing, then you try new shit. That's what I mean.
I do feel it is, and I don't know what that... I also feel like, especially when you're doing these shorter spots, sometimes around
yeah.
town, that you gotta
kill, and you know, and
you gotta hit it.
And also, if you don't hit it, there's part of you that's sort of like, I'm just gonna get through this. You know, I got these five bits, right. And all I got to do is this shit,
right?
And then you get stuck in that.
Yeah,
you get the opener. You know what you're gonna open with.
Yeah,
and then you got your.
Well, I don't. I don't. I go up there. I mean, it's.
Oh, you do crowd work
at the top every time. Yeah, because it has to. That makes it new for me because that way I don't. My plan.
Right.
Is completely abandoned.
Sure.
I have chunks in my head I want to do, and always a few new things so that the set is worthwhile. But if I don't do some bullshitting up top.
Yeah.
Because then it actually always I go I'm like I think I'm gonna open with this and then it always changes and that way it's a completely organic.
Yeah, you got to make it fresh, you know? I'm not judging you. I'm not.
I know you're not. You're very supportive.
Yeah, no, I think you're good. And I'm just kind of like, I know exactly, it's hard with the short spots to generate new stuff because you get used to stuff. And then if you take a shit in the middle of your set, then you got to put it back together in fucking 45 seconds.
Yes.
What are you going
to
do?
But back to your point of feeling the comfort of the store, I don't feel the pressure of needing to kill anymore.
Right.
There. I want to do well when it's a great crowd and the shows, whatever. And a lot of times now there's just from where we live and having more, you know, friends and people to come out and see you.
Yeah.
Like let them or whatever. You know, when that happens at the store, especially when the crowd's hot, you want to deliver.
Sure. I just don't know what it means to kill. Like, you know, like it seems to me that if I really want to set my mind on killing, then it's I'm doing something other than being present.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Is that like, I know the bits that are like, I could boom, kaboom, kaboom, and just sort of like, look at that, look at that, look at these fucking people laughing. Yes. And then like, you know, what is that? That's just sort of like, it's...
Exactly. It's why I do crowd work, because I break the monotony of anything that I felt like was going to be predetermined.
Yeah, if you know how
planned.
To kill.
Yes. So every
there's
time...
There's no risk to it.
I feel a sense of, you know, trust and confidence in myself and feel like I'm growing each time when I do throw myself off course or dig a hole that I hadn't planned on and then can try to get out of that by putting the set back together and getting to a bit that I hadn't planned on or starting something and then having it tie into something that I hadn't planned on doing.
That's what you got
to
do.
That to me is the most fun. And that's I feel like the crowd picks up on that. At least the
spontaneity of it, and also like, well, that's how I try. That's how I work.
Patrice, Geraldo, Burr. These are guys that I really looked up to when I started. Who have that flow, the looseness that I feel like are conversational to a point to where it's you can't tell where the bits in the conversation.
I know, but people say that to me when I get off now. It's like, would you just make all that up? I'm like, no, awesome. I worked hard.
Yeah, for sure you get pissed. Yeah, because that's your tone. Yeah,
well, I don't quite get pissed, but it's sort of like.
No, I've seen you throw a backpack.
Yeah.
You had a backpack last time I saw you.
Did I?
And a bunch of new pins on your jacket.
Did I?
Remember I complimented you on your pins?
That's right.
That was another great thing.
There was two pins. I don't have a lot of
pins. It was a lot of pins for a jacket.
Yeah. No, it's like two pins. The other day?
Two new pins. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not like Adam Egget. I have 90
pins. Well, that's
pins.
A lot of decals and patches.
No, I've only been like one or two pins. Like one of them is a Comedy Store pin.
Exactly.
Okay. What backpack?
You're like the guy that wears the band t-shirt to the show, right?
No. I'm not.
Have you done that?
Nope. I see people do it with
you
me.
You judge that person.
Well, no, I would never.
Or that wear Marc Maron shirts to the show.
Yeah, and I like it. It's nice. Of course, yeah, but I'm not that guy. I can barely wear t-shirts with things on them. I go through phases where I'm like, I don't want anything on my shirt.
How did you feel when we were on the same flight to Utah?
That was nice.
And
you were going to Adam Devine's bachelor party in the mountains somewhere. This guy gets married in Mexico and he has a bachelor party where you got to drive
in Lake the Ozarks.
Okay, yeah,
the Ozarks. Your response was so I applauded the, because hey, talking across the aisle, I would have been fine if you had said what up and then put on your headphones and been like, I'll see you back in LA,
right?
But you had a couple gabs back and forth, and then you said, and I said, I'm going to the Lake of the Ozarks for Adam's bachelor party. You go, awesome, great. Yeah. That sounds awesome. And then I go, yeah. And then once we started walking off the plane, you asked more and more questions. You just had this very real moment where you go, that sounds like a fucking nightmare. It's like, and it turned out, I mean, it was such a shit show.
Yeah.
But you saw the debauchery that hadn't even gone down yet, which got me even more excited for it, could.
It was fun?
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. I mean, again, Devine is a Midwest, Nebraska, Omaha kid that has been drinking since he was 12.
Yeah.
So you truly get to find out what your liver is capable of.
Right.
I'm one parent, North Seattle, didn't drink until, got force drank when I was in this summer stock production of The Wiz by the director, gave me a shot of tequila when I was 14.
Oh.
And
where'd that end up?
I mean, that was, then my next drink was college after that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That did it, huh?
Yeah. It was awful. Just burned.
Wow.
Weed, though. Weed, I found at the end of high school. Yeah. Thank God, the end.
So now, what's happening? You're going on tour?
I'm on pretty much every weekend right now. AdamRayComedy.com for all the tour dates.
Yeah.
A lot of great clubs.
And you're headlining.
Headlining. I've been headlining for since.
I'm not, again, don't get defensive.
Can you tell? I mean, it's like, there's so many people still in my life, at least, that will, you know what it goes back to? I remember when I first graduated college and I would have friends from the fraternity from back home in Seattle that would go, you still doing the comedy thing?
Yeah, I know.
Because
my parents used to do that.
They go, I don't see you on a billboard.
Yeah.
I haven't seen you on Hulu.
How come you're not on TV?
How come you're not on TV? Ugh. I saw you in that Jim Belushi thing, but you just said a couple things.
And you're like, well, here's a list of my resume. I'm in a lot of things.
That doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Everyone has their own idea of what it is.
They're like, sort of like, you know that guy? They always mention a more famous guy. Why can't you be, Adam Devine seems to be your friend.
Do what he's doing.
Yeah.
Why can't you be on Modern Family?
Fucking ridiculous.
But tour right now, and then a podcast about last night, and Pam and Tommy's out now. Young Rock season 2 is out now on NBC, and then I'm in the show.
What's that like? Is that like Chris Rock show?
No, it's about Dwayne the Rock Johnson's life.
But it's when he was a kid, right?
It's three different time periods in his life. He's running for office in 2034, and then it's flashbacks to 10, 15, and 19. And I play Vince McMahon, who created the WWE and was a father figure mentor to Dwayne. And so that's season 2, and then Gaslit comes out April 24th with your girl Betty
Gilpin.
Yeah. Julie Roberts and Sean Penn about the Watergate break-in. I play Ron Ziegler, Nixon's press secretary. So again, just another who's that guy playing that guy.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
But that's good.
It's great.
Character acting is the best. I mean, those are the guys that have the longest careers.
I also came out here to act, and this has been the best year for it. And so, and it's afforded more opportunities with stand-up, which is all I see you guys doing the theaters and all that, and it's... I'll be 40 in June, and it's a stacking of the chips. I want to get better every year. I want to make sure I'm taking care of myself, maximize the family time, and just get better. And it's like when I see, like, remember when I saw you in Montreal at some theater in the Round, almost had an amphitheater vibe.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It's funny, there's certain shows, and I want to make a point to tell you this, that are just like stained in my brain as things that just, and hours that I've seen that go, man, I want to get to that. You know, I can envision it.
Yeah.
Where it's like getting at that level where I have that size of a room.
Yeah.
'Cause, you know, I've opened for people in those rooms.
Sure.
But to get there where the people are, because everyone was there for you.
Oh, that was that nice one, the Palace to Arts.
Yes.
Like, it was nice. That's a nice theater.
It was cool because the ovation you got when you came out was so welcoming and so deserved. And it was just a cool thing where you go, oh, man, when you sticking with this is a big part of it.
Yeah.
Evolving and being committed to it like you are.
Yeah.
And
No choice.
Exactly, though.
Yeah.
But then having all these people, everyone was there for you. There might have been a couple people that were being like,
just wandered in from the street.
Yeah, is this Arch Barker?
Yeah,
let himself go. Yeah, and but no, mostly.
Wow, I haven't heard that name in a while.
Yeah, Australia's finest.
Is he still there?
I think so.
Mm.
But anyway, so that was a cool thing to see, and it's definitely always been in the. I don't have vision board stuff, but like as far as like, wow, getting to that point to where people are coming out
to see you,
for you and to enjoy
going.
It. Because I do my thing on the road and the shows are fun and great and people walk away and it's always bittersweet because they walk away and just in DC at the Improv, which was probably the best room I had sales wise in my career to this point. And having people that have come out who'd come to shows before is special and but you just go, you get a taste of it and you go, fuck,
How
do you make it bigger?
Yeah, you selling T-shirts?
I'm not.
You sell?
I've got merch.
You got merch
on my website, but I haven't brought it out on the road enough because
it's a pain.
I know, man.
Then you got to sit there. Even if you had a bad show, you got to sit there. Then you're like, I'm not going out there with my CDs.
I'd rather just chum it up with people and have.
That show sucked. I'm keeping the T-shirts in here.
I definitely have done that. I just give them to the staff, and then I'm just losing money. But it's fun, man, and this was a treat. You know, as I've told you every time when I see you at the store, certain episodes that I dig. I mean, the fact that I am sitting in the same chair where Obama has sat, George Clooney, and Dean Del Rey. I mean,
Dean Del Rey. Clooney was on Zoom, but
well, it feels like Clooney was sitting there.
Josh Brolin, how's that?
Wow.
Yeah,
I saw him at a bar in Venice once.
Oh wow,
he was like my third celebrity encounter when I got to L.A.
He's got a very familiar vibe. Like you look at him, he'll look at you like, "Hey, buddy."
Incredible, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
He's a good guy. I think.
Homies? How many people do you continue the...
None. Not more than one or two exchanges, and then we're not.
And who
friends.
Is that? It's a two-way street, but...
I don't, like, I mean, there are people that, like, will...
You've got your friends.
...will reach out to me sometimes that I've had on the show, and I'm always surprised. Like, if I get a text from John Hamm, I'm like, hey, it's Hamm, give me a text.
Cool.
You know, me and Guillermo del Toro almost became friends, but I don't know, something happened.
What?
Went south very quickly.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what I did. That's why I can't do it.
What about Clooney?
Clooney's very nice
guy. He loves you.
Yeah, but no, we don't. I don't have his number.
No Italy invites.
No, nothing. But
no Candy Club invites.
Nothing. Brad Pitt. When I see him, he loves me.
Yeah,
but no, I don't have his number.
No,
but it's better off.
Yeah,
because then like it's like texting with a chick you just meet, right?
Right.
Because you don't know where you're going to fuck it up. And so if you're texting with one of these big stars, and all of a sudden they're not texting you anymore, you're like, oh goddamn it, I blew it with Clooney. I don't. What did they say? Let me scroll back and see. How did I fuck it up with Clooney?
I blew it with Clooney.
Yeah.
Is the name of your next album.
Yeah, but I haven't done it
special.
Yet. I haven't done it yet. I keep my distance. I respect their autonomy.
You read the room.
I respect their autonomy as major celebrities.
I love that.
All right, buddy.
Thanks a lot.
I'm going to text you, though. I can text you.
I appreciate it.
All right, man.
I'll text back.
Okay. That was Adam Ray, the podcast about last night. You can get it where you get podcasts and adamraycomedy.com for his tour dates. Now, here's some guitar. I'm okay. I'm all right. Just a little strung out. From the road, from the travel, from the life. where it lives. Monkey, La Fonda, cat angels everywhere.